Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, March 23rd, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
President Robert Mugabe's cabinet has ordered all foreign-owned companies operating in Zimbabwe to shut down next month if they do not comply with the country's indigenization regulations.
This is a decision that affects all sectors. It's a decision which says, look, abide by the law.
China says it will give Zimbabwe rice worth $24 million for drought relief aid as food shortages grip the nation.
Former Education Minister David Coulthard clashes with Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa on five brigade atrocities.
The specific comments in the book regarding Vice President Mnangagwa actually came from the Chronicle reports in 1983, which we've had access to.
And no Zimbabwean has been caught up in terrorist attacks in Belgium.
We have been actively contacting the authorities here, and we are aware that one or two Zimbabweans were transiting through Brussels, but fortunately they were not affected.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
President Robert Mugabe's cabinet has ordered all foreign-owned companies operating in Zimbabwe to close shop on April 1st if they do not comply with the country's indigenization regulations requiring them to transfer at least 51% of their shares to black Zimbabweans. Indigenization Minister Patrick Juwawo made the announcement in Harare today. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Juwawo told a news conference that the cabinet decision would ensure that the indigenization law was complied with, adding that this provides support measures for the empowerment of black Zimbabweans.
This is a decision that affects all sectors. It's a decision which says, look, abide by the law. Companies make their own decisions here. We're leaving this to companies to decide. They must decide that, look, are we going to abide by the law or not? And if I'm a shareholder of a company, I would now be asking my management, look, Mr. MD, I would be asking my board, chairman of the board, why are we not abiding by the law?
Some economists have argued that potential investors are shunning Zimbabwe because of its scary policies, such as the Black Empowerment Regulations. However, Joao told Studio 7 after the news conference that the country does not require any foreign direct investment.
Foreign direct investment is not the solution to this economy. This argument that says this country is crying for foreign direct investment is not true. Yes, foreign direct investment is something that is required, but what is actually required more in this economy is efficiency, productivity, and higher production levels.
The cabinet's decision, announced by Juwawo, was criticized by former chief economist in the finance ministry, Masimba Manyanya, who said it was surprising that the government had taken such a decision at a time when the International Monetary Fund has just completed a staff-monitored program in the country. He added that most black Zimbabweans do not have the capital to venture into top businesses owing to the country's economic meltdown. He said this move would cripple Zimbabwe's ailing economy. Efforts to get a comment from the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries and the Zimbabwe National Chamber of Commerce were fruitless. The decision to force foreign-owned companies to close shop by April 1st if they do not meet the nation's empowerment regulations also came at a time when the government also ordered all diamond firms that were operating in the Chiadzwa area in Manicaland province to cease operations, rendering thousands of workers jobless. The government said the companies were not properly registered, while some of them were refusing to join a state entity designed to take care of diamond mining activities. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Chiripasi. Chinese ambassador to Zimbabwe, Wang Ping, says the Asian nation is expected to provide rice worth about $24 million for drought relief aid as Zimbabwe facing a devastating El Nino-induced drought, which has resulted in serious food shortages. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera has the details from Harare.
Speaking at a drought response stakeholders meeting co-hosted by the United Nations and the Office of the President and Cabinet, Ping said the Chinese government had given more than what the embassy had requested.
China is going to provide or donate rice worth of 160 million yuan, which is approximately equals to 24.6 million US dollars in rice to Zimbabwe as emergency food assistance.
He said the assistance is more than double the Chinese government had provided to Zimbabwe in the 2014 season. The head of the United States Agency for International Development, Stephen Funke, and the British Agency for International Development Chief, Annabel Gerry, also said they were in touch with their countries with a view to mobilize additional funding for drought relief. Funke said the USAID, which has since June last year spent $35 million on humanitarian assistance in the country, would soon be making an announcement on additional funding.
This year, our budget is budgeted for $40 million, which is already an increase, and we received indications last week that there will be a substantial increase to this money, and we hope over the next 2 weeks that we'll be able to announce what that amount is.
European Union Ambassador to Zimbabwe Philippe Van Dam said while the European Union was willing to assist, it was worried by the discrepancies in the numbers of people who needed assistance.
We are of course working on additional support measures. While I'm always asking questions on coherence of data, it's because the coherence of data makes it so much easier to plead with all capitals on what are the gaps. So we are very eagerly waiting for the finalization of the updated humanitarian response plan because this will facilitate the communication with our respective capitals.
The government says almost 4 million people are in urgent need of drought relief aid. Air Commodore Jasper Marangwanda of the National Grain Command Center said about 3.1 million people from virtually all rural districts were in need of food. He said though government has secured resources to purchase grain, the state was failing to distribute the monthly national requirement of 30,400 metric tons. He said only 20,266 tons were being distributed monthly.
This means that only 57% of the monthly grain requirements have been released by GMB for distribution to the vulnerable.
He said there was need to complement the Grain Marketing Board, the District Development Fund and the Road Motor Services in moving grain to ensure that all affected families received grain on time. Zimbabwe has secured more than $240 million for the purchase of grain, but is facing problems in bringing grain into the country as neighboring nations like Zambia are also facing drought and have put restrictions on maize exports. So far, imports are coming from South America, while Europe is also being considered as another maize source. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Former Senator David Coltart, who is also a veteran lawyer, maintains that he stands by remarks contained in his book regarding what Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa is reported to have said in 1983 when government deployed the North Korean-trained 5 Brigade in Matabeleland and the Midlands provinces, which, according to human rights activists, allegedly killed at least 20,000 innocent civilians. The massacres, commonly referred to as Gugurahundi or washing away chaff, have reportedly unsettled the vice president, who's believed to be harboring presidential ambitions. Our correspondent Taurai Shaba brings us more.
Coltart told Studio 7 that he carried out a thorough research for his autobiography titled The Struggle Continues, saying he stands by what he wrote. Coltart has become embroiled in a row with Mnangagwa after it emerged that his recently published book contains statements that sometime in 1983 Mnangagwa made, which encouraged violence against civilians, marking the start of what came to be known as Gukurahundi. Coltart said he relied on some reports in the state-controlled Chronicle newspaper, which he had believed to be true, as Mnangagwa never sued the publication for those remarks.
The specific comments in the book regarding Vice President Mnangagwa actually came from Chronicle reports in 1983, which we've had access to. And my assumption has always been that the Chronicle then reported accurately. Vice President Mnangagwa never complained about the Chronicle reports of what he said then, and he's never sued them in the past 33 years. So one has to assume that he was correctly reported on. And to that extent, yes, I stand by what is written in the book.
In a statement, Mnangagwa said he was concerned by remarks in Coltart's book and that the statements attributed to him were false. He has threatened to sue the senator, but Coltart has remained steadfast, asked if he believed that the ordinary majority could still forgive the perpetrators of Gukurahundi given the state's apparent intransigence. Coltart, who has in the past urged offenders to apologize for the atrocities, said he feels that the massacres cannot be taken in isolation, as Zimbabwe has gone through a number of traumatic experiences in the past. Coltart said he would not be the right person to demand any apology from Gukurahundi perpetrators, but said he believed there is need for truth-telling.
This is not something that I can say. I wasn't a victim of the Gukurahundi. To that extent, I have no right to demand any apology from Vice President Mnangagwa. All I've done is represent people, victims of that era. And from my representation of those people, I know that they do want an acknowledgement that what happened, in fact, happened. And yes, they would like an apology. And they would like some form of communal reparations for the harm that was done to them.
Human rights activist Mbuso Fuzwayo said Mnangagwa could have used this opportunity to take responsibility and come clean on his involvement in Gukurahundi atrocities.
Instead of him denying, I think he was supposed to be utilizing this opportunity to apologize to the people of Matabeleland and in Zimbabwe in general. If he thinks it's not true what the Coltart wrote and what is in the Chronicle archives, I think the best route for him is to go to court so that he proves his innocence in court. That's what the people are expecting him to do, either to take responsibility, apologize as a vice president, or go to court to say no. The Chronicle wrote lies about me and Coltart is writing lies about me.
Programs director Tine Mukwewa of the Abameli Human Rights Lawyers said as the issue of Gukurahundi has rarely been discussed openly, Zimbabweans could salvage something positive from the row between Coltart and Mnangagwa to help bring closure over the issue.
Clearly, Zimbabwe has had no conversation around Gukurahundi. So this is an opportune time where Zimbabwe can, in a structured manner, have a truth-telling mechanism where the victims themselves can tell their story, where the accused can also tell their own story. Zimbabwe now needs the National Peace and Reconciliation Bill to come into play, but the bill has to speak about truth-telling so that we find in Zimbabwe.
Participants at a recent meeting on transitional justice said there can only be closure on the thorny Gukurahundi issue if there's telling of the truth and acknowledgement of the atrocities. The 5 Brigade was deployed in Matabeleland and Midlands provinces to quell what the government called a dissident menace caused by some disgruntled former ZIPRA members who were unhappy over the way they were left out of the Zimbabwe National Army and other political issues. A local newspaper posted photographs of articles published in the Chronicle in 1983 in which Mnangagwa reportedly compared dissidents to cockroaches and bugs. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shava.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
a documentary directed by a Zimbabwean wins a top film award here in the U.S.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Belgian authorities continue searching for one of the men believed to be responsible for Tuesday's airport and metro bombings in Brussels, which killed at least 31 people and wounded 271 others. Belgian federal prosecutor Frederik van Leeuw confirmed that two brothers, Khalid and Ibrahim El Bakrou, were the suicide bombers killed in the attacks.
Khalid, 27, blew himself up on a metro train at the Maubik station, according to Van Leeuw. He said the 29-year-old Ibrahim carried out one of the two suicide explosions at the airport. Both men, who were identified by their fingerprints, were Belgian nationals and had criminal records for armed robbery. Khalid has been wanted on charges of terrorism, according to a red notice issued by Interpol. U.S. President Barack Obama joined other leaders in expressing his condolences to the people of Belgium for the attacks at the Brussels airport and metro system. He said his mission is to defeat ISIL.
One of the great strengths of the United States, and part of the reason why we have not seen more attacks in the United States, is we have an extraordinarily successful, patriotic, integrated Muslim American community. They do not feel ghettoized. They do not feel isolated. Their children are our children's friends going to the same schools. They are our colleagues in our workplaces. They are our men and women in uniform fighting for our freedom. And so any approach that would single them out or target them for discrimination is not only wrong and un-American, but it also would be counterproductive because it would reduce the strength, the antibodies that we have to resist terrorism.
That there was U.S. President Barack Obama issuing his condolences to the people of Belgium. Meanwhile, so far reports indicate that there is no Zimbabwean who was caught up in the explosions. Studio 7's Blessing Zulu reached Zimbabwe ambassador to Belgium, Tedias Tafirenyika Chifamba, for more details.
The information that we have so far is that all Zimbabweans are safe. At least I can speak on behalf of the diplomats and their families. I can also speak of the students who are studying in Belgium. We have been actively contacting the authorities here, and we are aware that one or two Zimbabweans were transiting through Brussels. But fortunately, they were not affected. For some that we were expecting to arrive yesterday, they disembarked in Paris and came by bus to Belgium. So far, the information that we have is that no Zimbabweans were affected.
But how is the situation like at the moment?
Well, the situation is very tense, but the authorities are doing everything in their power to keep the whole situation calm, but on maximum alert. The airport is still closed. Hopefully, it should be open later today or tomorrow, or as soon as they are convinced that they have cleared the place and it's safe for use.
The United States State Department has warned Americans about potential risks to travel in Europe, saying, and I quote, terrorist groups continue to plan near-term attacks throughout Europe, targeting sporting events, tourist sites, restaurants, and transportation. Any travel advisory from Harare?
For the Americans, one could probably understand because one of the areas that was attacked at the airport yesterday was the checking counters for U.S.-bound flights. And perhaps this is why they would be quite edgy about giving their citizens travel warnings. But like anywhere else, we depend on the security advisories that are coming from host countries. And I would not at this stage think that we can say that it's dangerous to travel to Europe per se.
That was Zimbabwe Ambassador to Belgium, Tedias Tafirenyika Chifamba, speaking with Studio 7.
Businessman Donald Trump and Texas Senator Ted Cruz split two U.S. Republican presidential nominating contests yesterday, while on the Democratic side, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders won two of three states' races against former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton.
And a man who climbed an iconic 24-meter sequoia tree in downtown Seattle is still refusing to come down, despite efforts of police and firefighters.
A documentary, Lost Tongue, directed by Zimbabwean Davison Mudzingwa of Mvuraya Africa Production, scooped the prestigious Women Film Critics Circle Award at the just-ended Socially Relevant Film Festival held in New York in the United States. Mudzingwa says he's over the moon with the accolades as his documentary stood out among the best 8 out of 49 countries. He says they are encouraged by this recognition, adding that it gives them confidence that their work resonates with the whole world. The documentary is about the dying Nu language spoken by the Komani San of the Kalahari Desert in South Africa and how it can be saved from extinction. Reporter Jonga Kandemiri speaks with Mudzingwa about this achievement and what it means to Zimbabwe.
Firstly, we were surprised and then we were humbled to realize that there are people out there who realize the importance of our work. And when the Women Film Critics Circle singled out our production as one that they wanted to award at the Socially Relevant Film Festival, we're really encouraged by this, because this is the work that we did painstakingly for about 3 years. And to have someone in the United States of America realizing that there is something significant in this production, and there's something that is worth of awarding, we're really humbled and also encouraged at the same time.
How important is this award?
Firstly, I think this award is important at different levels. The first being the film itself will start turning heads. It will start gaining traction going forward. And more festivals will open up to this film to understand how our film got this particular award. And people would want to watch this kind of film. But the main aim of this film is to bring awareness on this critical issue of the language that is dying, the Kalahari. Not only that, but the values and the culture that is slowly dying, because any culture is attached to the language of any particular tribe. So we believe this documentary and this award or this recognition will bring to the attention to those authorities in the government, in the corporate sector, and also in foundations or individuals that is something that is urgent here that needs to be done, that has been highlighted or brought to the fore by this film.
But do you see the South African government taking any action following this achievement?
We really envisage that. That's the ideal situation, and we are proud or happy that the South African government responds to such kind of calls. And there's a particular board that they have called the Pan-African Language Board, and they work on these cases, and we hope once they see this documentary, they will try to expedite this case of the Komansan people to realize that the new language that is slowly dying can be resuscitated or can be saved so that it can live for more years to come.
How was the news received in South Africa that Lost Tongue has won an award?
The news is starting to filter out now because we won the award on Sunday evening. So it's starting to filter out now. And people that are close to this are really thrilled because they believe this cause is a worthy cause that needs to be followed, and that needs some particular attention from the whole country. This is not just the issue of the Kalahari or the Komansan people, but the whole country and the whole world needs to come or to bring their own attention and their own energy to the issue of Kalahari so that these people can have a multimedia center that we are bringing through the Lost Tongue Legacy Project so that they can have their own recordings of the language and also learn other particular skills through this multimedia center in the Kalahari. So what this and the excitement that is in the air in the country and around the world will bring this main issue to the fore.
Mr. Mudzingwa is a Zimbabwean. How is Zimbabwe benefiting from all these achievements?
Zimbabwe being part of the global world at the moment, we believe a story told elsewhere in the world can apply anywhere in another country. And this particular documentary is a universal themed documentary because it's an issue that has to do a culture issue, a values issue, an identity issue, and also a race issue, and it applies elsewhere. And in Zimbabwe in particular, we have issues of the same breadth. We have languages that are slowly dying, that are not recognized. Languages such as Nambia, Tonga, and also Ndau in the Manicaland, Kalanga. These are languages that are not recognized and are given prominence that they deserve. So I believe this story can as well be applicable in the situation in Zimbabwe. People will start to realize that, oh, what's happening in South Africa is also happening to us. What can we do? And they can do something motivated by this documentary.
That was Zimbabwean Davison Mudzingwa, director of Mvuraya Africa Productions in Johannesburg, South Africa, speaking with reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
And in sports news, Sports Minister Makosini Hlongwane and FIFA President Philip Chiyangwa met with the Warriors team in Harare today to boost their morale ahead of their Africa Cup of Nations qualifier this Easter holiday. Zimbabwe Football Association spokesperson Xolani Gwesela says Hlongwane and Chiyangwa wanted to also make sure that all is well in the Warriors' camp. He said preparations for the team's Africa Cup of Nations qualifier against Swaziland are now at an advanced stage, with most of the foreign-based players called in to boost the team in the country for the crucial match. Gwesela tells us that three players based in Britain called up for the tie were not able to make it, but are expected to be part of the squad in future.
The squad met the Minister of Sport and Recreation, Honorable Makosini Hlongwane, together with the FIFA President, Mr. Philip Chiyangwa, together with the FIFA Vice President, Mr. Omega Tshivanda, and the Director General of the FRSC, Mr. Nana Chena. These raised the morale of the players and they encouraged the team to work tirelessly and to bring glory to this beautiful nation and to raise the Zimbabwean flag high.
What did the minister say as a word of encouragement to the team?
The minister encouraged the players to work tirelessly and ensure that Zimbabwe emerges victorious. This will bring glory and delight to this beautiful nation of Zimbabwe.
But we understand that some of the foreign-based players who were called to be part of the team had not yet arrived. Can you update us on who is still to arrive in camp?
I can confirm that only three players, that is Tendai Darikwa, he indicated to us that he's ready to play for Zimbabwe, but he has some family issues to solve. Brendan Galloway, he was selected to play for the under-21 squad of England. Yes, he was unable to play for Zimbabwe, but he should decide to play for Zimbabwe in the future. The door is still open for him. Then we have Mark Bourne is in possession of a British passport. He's still sorting out his documentation. Once those citizenship issues are sorted out, he'll be free to play for Zimbabwe.
That was Xolani Gwesela, FIFA spokesperson, speaking to us from Harare.
Remember to tune in for live talk today, where we'll be talking with listeners and experts about government's move to shut down foreign-owned companies not complying with Zimbabwe's indigenization law. If you wish to join us, call us at 001-202-619-2007. I beg your pardon. The number again, 001-202-619-2077.
Now to recap on today's top stories. President Robert Mugabe's cabinet has ordered all foreign-owned companies operating in Zimbabwe to shut down next month if they do not comply with the country's indigenization regulations.
China says it will give Zimbabwe rice worth $24 million for drought relief and aid as food aid shortages grip the nation.
Former Education Minister David Colt had clashes with Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa on 5 brigade atrocities.
That's it for tonight. Please do stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with yours truly, Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.